Welcome to the Working Tools Podcast, where today we will be doing our wrap-up of Whither Are We Traveling by Dwight Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, brethren all, welcome to the Working Tools Podcast, a casual conversation around Freemasonry. First, it's important to note that our thoughts and opinions are our own and do not reflect those of our Grand Lodge or respective craft or concordant bodies. Please connect with us and ask questions via our website at theworkingtoolspodcast.com.
Today on the Working Tools Podcast, we have our usual group of hosts. We have Worshipful Brother Stephen Chung from Prince Charles Lodge No. 153 in Kelowna, British Columbia. Very Worshipful Brother David Colbeth from King Solomon No. 60 in Auburn, Washington. Worshipful Brother Jared Dunham, in from Penticton 147 in Penticton, British Columbia. And I'm Matt Apple, and I'm a member of Mill Creek No. 243 in Montlake Terrace, Washington. And welcome back to the podcast. So our last two episodes, we interrupted our train of talking about the Whither Are We Traveling article. No, we didn't really, did we? I should just restart. So it's all screwed up. I screwed up Jared's name, and then it all went downhill from there.
Yeah, it's all my fault.
Right. Now I have to remember to edit all this out because I always look for the, the little clip.
Or don't. This is probably the good part of the show. Everybody point and laugh at Apple.
You know, honestly, there are some times when we do this kind of stuff and it does bring some levity to the conversation. So people hang on.
I'll just keep going. What the heck? Roll on. So here we are talking about the wrap up of the Whither Are We Traveling article. We've been talking about it for a few months now. Jared's been reading the sections of the article or paper, however you want to call it, and in his mellifluous tones. And we've been discussing it. Our discussions were interrupted by we got to have an opportunity to interview the Grand Master of British Columbia and Yukon. And so those two episodes sort of broke it up a little bit. But we're back, and we are going to be doing our wrap-up today, what we thought of the article and things about it. So I guess the first thing that jumps to my mind is that I wish there had been more concreter steps of what people could, concreter, yeah, that's a word, that what people could do in their lodges to help to solve some of the problems. And now someone is going to jump in and tell me, no, there are plenty of them in there. But I know that's kind of the way I felt about it reading through the article.
But at least he was true to form. He told us at the beginning he wasn't going to.
This is true.
It's like, I'm going to tell you what's wrong, but I ain't going to tell you how to fix it.
For that matter, he sort of poked fun at that the Grand Lodges and stuff that were trying various things about how they were trying a scattershot approach and stuff.
But he did suggest on how to fix it, right? He's, the last paragraph there. You know, he comes to the conclusion of the series of exploratory articles with his faith in the basic worth of our ancient craft unshaken, convinced that the solution to Freemasonry's problem is Freemasonry. Let's just do Freemasonry, right? And that's kind of where we ended on in our last discussion on this, right? You know, and well, then that's open to everybody's interpretation of what Freemasonry is, right? So
we should offer
the solution, though.
We should be observant of our Freemasonry.
Well,
ooh, yeah, what a lead in.
What a lead in. That's what I was going to say.
So did you guys have overall impression?
Go ahead, Steve. No, you go ahead, Matt. Yeah, I thought you were on a roll with that.
Oh no, I was just going to toss it out to you guys and say what were your impressions, but.
I think he's right. I mean, you know, whether we've got 100 or 10 in our lodge, the answer is still do Freemasonry, right? And do it to your best possible, or do it as good as you possibly can so that it does stay strong and hopefully grow, right?
But I think isn't he asking over these 10 chapters, what is Freemasonry and what has it become, especially? And well, of course, that's a question that's been asked over the ages. But
yeah, well, he's talked in the last chapters over what it's become because everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel. But you know, he keeps alluding to it throughout the whole thing, and then again at the end, that no need to reinvent the wheel, just need to do what we're supposed to do, and do it well.
But right? The problem is, no one knows what we're supposed to do. He even says it.
I think that's what
he says. That there's masters and past masters and grandmasters that haven't the foggiest idea what it is we're supposed to do.
So, in this last or second to last page, he's got the purpose of Freemasonry, which is probably as close as you're going to get to that description, right? And the purpose of Freemasonry, he says, in it, its purpose is the same as it has been since the day when the stones of King Solomon's temple were hewn, squared, and numbered in the quarries where they were all raised. It is to take an individual, just one man at a time, mind you, and as good as a man, as good a man as possible, and try and make them make a better man out of them. That is all. How desperately the world needs just that. And if that technique is outmoded, then the experience of 2,000 years is all wrong. A parable of mustard seed is horse and buggy philosophy. The leaven in the loaf is a cruel hoax. Well, yeah, I don't know. That's what we claim. We take good men and make them better. Well, how do we do that? By enlightening them and giving them the tools. So let's explain the tools to them. Let's do Freemasonry, right? There's a reason education is on the agenda of every meeting, right? Yeah, we got to deal with boring paying the bills and taking care of business. But, you know, there is built in there the education component where we do have the opportunity to go back and look at all the teachings that we teach our candidates as they go through the process to become a Master Mason. And really, there's so much there. We should be analyzing that in our lodge for our educational purposes. And then we can say we are doing what we're supposed to, according to this, anyways. Yeah, no? I don't know. I think if you do the education, that's the best you can do.
I wish education was in every meeting.
You don't have it on the agenda of every meeting?
No, honestly.
No.
And even when we do, sometimes it doesn't happen. But
yeah.
Why not?
No, not always
no education quality. Officer?
Nope. We don't have one of those.
Mm. Well,
I found reading this, I'm going to call it, it's a series of articles, because even refers to it as it is really originally a series of articles. I found it interesting that had I read this 30 years ago, well, not quite 30 years ago, when I first was raised, I would have agreed with everything that he was saying. But I noticed that at least up in our jurisdiction over the last 10 years, we have made significant strides along sort of the complaints that he makes. We have our 6 steps to initiation. We've introduced more education into our programs. We've over the last couple of years with our Begin You program, you know, the Grand Lodge of BC is, I think we are on our way to getting better, but we're not there yet.
What I tell my kids, I don't demand perfection. I want progress.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know I said this before, is I really would have liked to have, because I know that Most Worshipful Brother Smith passed away in the early 90s. It would have been interesting to see, you know, 30 years, because it was 30 years after he wrote these, if he still had the same opinions and if he had seen any changes. But
I agree. Yeah, the perspective or the perspective of time tends to change some of these opinions. But
mm-hmm.
Well, Matt, you alluded to what we're going to be talking about in our next. Now, I want to take your thunder away, but we're going to be progressing into another series eventually. And that author describes the idea that this is an ongoing thing. You know, it was, he wrote about it almost 20 years ago, well, 15 years ago. And then Smith talked about it in the 60s, and it's been talked about in the 40s and then the 20s and then, you know, in the 18th century. I mean, it's been talked about forever, right? And isn't that really what the formation of the Grand Lodge was, the UGLE, was that because they couldn't agree on things? And so it's been going on since the beginning. And this afternoon I started to dig into some of the ancient charges and some of the other books in the Manual of the Lodge and other things. I think, my gosh, this has been since the beginning of Masonry, which is kind of what he alluded to. But I don't know. Is it because we can't agree on what we should be doing and shouldn't be doing? And what is it that we should be doing? I think that's the ultimate question too. What is Freemasonry, right?
Well, I mean, the problem, I guess part of the issue is, if you get three people together, you're going to get three different opinions, because that's just life. Like, you know,
five different
opinions. Yeah. I'm trying to be generous here. So, I mean, but yeah, I agree that, you know, it has been, you know, over the last while, everyone trying to decide what are we supposed to do? Because I've never liked that, you know, take good men and make them better, because I always found that kind of trite. Because we can say that until we're blue in the face, but if we don't know really how we do it.
I've thought the same thing. I like the phrase. I like the idea of the phrase. I wonder how many lodges do that. How does you walk into a lodge and you go to their meeting and you think at the end of it, how did this make me better?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because when you read the list, specifically the last one, is he talks about, you know, people don't do it because it's hard. You know, it's so many times I hear people say that, you know, oh, I can't do, you know, that's too hard for me to do that. I'm not willing to do the stretch. I'm not willing to, you know, push myself to maybe become better at something that takes me a while longer than it should to do it. And that's the whole point that when we go through our degrees, is that it ain't easy. It's not supposed to be easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it and it wouldn't be special.
Well, if we look at those words, we take good men and make them better. What is that? I mean, whether we agree with the words or not, what is the process of that? And he kind of outlines it in the very beginning. Of course, first of all, we have to level the leadership quality. We have to make sure that we have excellent leaders, and then guarding the West Gate. We have to make sure we guard the West Gate. So through guarding the West Gate, we're looking for those good men in theory, right? Or what the lodge considers to be good men. Now, well, each lodge may have a different level of leadership and different level of.
I take with guarding the West Gate, not necessarily the good men, but the men who are willing to make the effort.
Well, wouldn't that be a quality of good in that lodge?
But good is, once again, good, bad, nebulous terms that, you know, I hate to use the term, like, is a person bad because, you know, are they, I shouldn't say bad, not like, what, how do you qualify good? Like
and therein lies the reasoning behind those six words. It's difficult. You can't put masonry into six words.
No.
But this is the beauty of the discussion. What does good mean when somebody says we take good men?
Right.
Good men make them better. Well, what is good? I think you're onto it. You're onto the idea that it's not just what the common idea of good is.
Right. And as I said, good. It's like that old adage, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing, is that, you know, or, you know, now I'm going to just start spilling, you know, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear. You know, you know, it's the, I hate to use the term quality, but, you know, it's so hard.
So if you use the word good as the basis, but then said, these are the things we consider to be, to make a, what is a good man? And you could put the tenets of Freemasonry in there, and, you know, the prudence, this, all the different elements of what we talk about in our degrees that make up a good Mason are not truly synopsized, but we could cram them into that four-letter word, good, and say these are the things that are good about Masons, the men that want to become Masons.
Oh, I see. Well, but the problem is if you already have those qualities, you don't need Freemasonry, because the whole idea of Freemasonry is to work on those qualities.
But what doesn't mean that they're perfected, right? That we're working on them.
But you're asking for, but you're saying that someone who has these qualities is obviously more than someone who doesn't and could, like, I agree. I see where you're going, I agree that when we see these qualities in people, that these are the qualities we're looking for, not necessarily perfected, but at least, you know, oh my God, the diamond in the rough.
Because it's not a reformatory program necessarily, right? It's not supposed to be a reformatory. Necessarily. I mean,
no. Well, but it is not reformatory. It's a
crucible of the soul.
Yeah. Yes, I agree that, well, but maybe it is actually supposed to be a bit reformatory.
Well, yes. Yes.
I mean, we're not reformatory in the sense of, you know, punishing for bad deeds, but reformatory in the sense that, you know, we recognize that which is less than ideal in ourselves and we want to change that.
Sure. No pudding for you.
No.
So I think what...
But I ate my meat.
If I can interpret what you're saying, is that if you did a Dungeons and Dragons character sheet on an individual and said you wanted their whatever, an ideal person's temperance would be 10, and someone's temperance is 1, or you know, maybe we don't want that guy, but if we can take someone whose temperance is 3 and crank it up to a 7, then we've made a relatively good man better.
Exactly. And I think I alluded to it in the past show is that I have a good brother, and he would allow me to say this, that one day he said to me, David, I was a good Mason today. I said, what do you mean? He said, I didn't jump out of my truck and scream at the guy that cut me off. And he would have done that before probably. And now he didn't, because he was, had been taught. And so, yeah, I think he was a good guy, but now he'd maybe better. So
when I was in Creston this weekend, they had on the outside of their building a poster, and this is, you know, what is a Freemason, and followed up by what is Freemasonry, and it, you know, it kind of just spells it out. A Freemason is a man who has taken an obligation to make of himself the best he can for himself, his family, and his community. And what is Freemasonry is a fraternity designed to teach morality and ethics and train good men to make themselves of service to themselves, their families, and their communities. Freemasonry, of course, is not a religion, but it teaches its members to be active in their chosen faith. And Freemasonry subscribes to no partisan politics, but it teaches members to be active in their civil concerns. And it's not a charity, although it promotes charity in its members. In North America, Freemasons contribute some $2.5 million a day to operate children's hospitals, cancer clinics, burn wards, seniors' homes, and other such facilities. All right. So, you know, like, we teach them and we give them the tools to improve themselves. And hopefully, through the process, they improve and thus become better. Yes.
I feel like Steve did his homework for this episode, and he's been quoting things left and right, and I'm going, yeah, I guess it seems pretty good to me.
Well, you know, it's we got stuck on this last time, so it was like, okay, well, something else has to make sense, right? And I kind of agree with the final statement, and there, just the answer is Freemasonry. Do what we're supposed to be doing, and we will continue to be here another 100 years from now. Maybe not as many of us, but we will be here and we'll hold a standard.
And I know I keep saying that things sound trite to me, and that is it. It's like, just do Freemasonry. And that is just such a circular statement.
Yes.
I actually have never liked that ending of the articles, because it's a cop-out. Well, and only because, as I said, if you ask 5 different Masons what Freemasonry is, you'll get 5 different answers. Stop throwing up the
it's Masonic gang signs.
But no, because because like what Stephen read, there's parts of that that I disagree with. That I don't think we teach people to be moral and ethical, because that's once and that morality and ethics are not something fixed. What one person considered, like, society isn't that way. Like, what was considered moral and ethical back in 60 years ago when this was written is not the same as today.
True. It evolves.
So you're saying Freemasonry evolves.
Matt, plug yours.
Oh, here we go.
The craft can progress, but not the ritual.
That's right. There will be no innovations in the ritual.
We've talked in the past about the point within a circle, and the idea is that each person's due balance may be slightly different based on what their current moral and ethics might be, or beliefs.
This might be off topic, but this is something I think about once in a while.
So probably it is off topic.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's way off topic. I said probably, trying to be generous to myself, but here we go. So my daughter was in Rainbow. Actually, I guess technically she still is. My daughter is in Rainbow. She's not very active anymore because she's away at college. You talk to adults that are involved in Rainbow and they'll say, oh, look at little Melissa. Melissa was, when she first joined Rainbow, she was a little 10-year-old, 11-year-old girl who, you know, wouldn't look you in the eye and couldn't speak in front of people. And look at her now. She's 21 and she's coming out of Rainbow with these public speaking abilities, and she's, you know, a sociable, and she'll shake your hand et cetera, et cetera. Isn't this wonderful what Rainbow has done for Melissa? And I'm not saying Melissa or that Rainbow is a bad organization or doesn't do these things, but there's always a part of me that says, well, yeah, she was 10 and now she's 21. People, that's, you know, 100% of, you know, 50% of her life up to this point. It's, you know, how much of this is Rainbow's doing and how much of it is just her maturing as a human being? And I sort of always wonder about this in Masonry too. Like like David was saying, you know, I was a good Mason today, or I try to make an effort in my life to be less hot-headed than I used to be. And I find myself wondering, you know, is this Masonry improving me? Is this me improving myself in the framework of Masonry? Or is this a change I would have made in my life anyway? Because, you know, now I'm 50 and before I was 25 and a hothead. And it is difficult to say, you know, this aspect of my life has changed because of this part of Masonry. You're muted, Steve.
But think back and consider that the education system doesn't teach our kids about public speaking and things that'll build their confidence in that. There's lots of things that I'm sure that Melissa would have learned in Rainbow that just definitely would not have been taught in the public school system. So unless you had Melissa in something else, where she would have learned other social skills, other, who knows, maybe instead of learning public speaking and stuff, she would have learned art, you know, had she gone to an after-school program that focused on art and painting and things like that. Maybe she would have excelled in that. But it's what she was immersed in that made her or influenced who she is today. So you still got to give some credit to what the organization tries to do that she's immersed in.
I think there's a combination of the nurture and the nature. And so,
yeah, and don't forget to credit the parents.
Well, yeah. But also, how are the parents? I mean, are they potentially involved, whether they're involved in the Rainbow or Masonry or some concordant group or their church or their community organization or whatever? I think, as the people say, there's a story of you are what you read and the people you associate with. In the next 5 years or next 10 years, that's who you will become, most likely, if you look around. And so, if whether it's
Masonry, I mean, I'm going to be more like Steve in 10 years. I don't know.
Only once a week. No. So I think it's a combination of that. There are opportunities in school to be in leadership or to be in speaking classes or drama or those kind of things. And so I think there is opportunity for someone to develop themselves in the school system, depending on what school, of course. The bigger the schools, maybe more opportunities there are. But it is critical, I think, to have yourself and the kids in plugged into something, whether it's a quality sports program or a quality after school program or youth group program. But these days, I mean, 100 years ago, Masonry, maybe DeMolay, some of the youth groups, the Jobies and Rainbow, some of the only youth groups around 100 years ago or 75 years ago. There were some, but now it's prolific. They're all over. There's all kinds of things. It's almost too many to choose from. Many of them good, not all of them great. But it also depends on the adults that run it, usually, right? If you get a good coach, you usually have a good experience. If you get a bad coach, you get a bad experience. Just like in a youth group program, you get a bad good advisor or a bad advisor. Well, again, it's about who you're around and who you deal with. I was reading a story that I'm not going to go down that path. That we're going to take us off on a whole different tangent. So,
yeah, stay on my tangent, damn it.
Or on the tangent talking about the article itself.
What article? We're talking about an article?
Well, I don't know. I was just kidding.
But yeah, I mean, I guess it's sometimes I feel like it is difficult to say, you know, what am I trying to say? Okay, so for instance, the purpose of this article. Hey, look, as for this article, they talk about selling masonry too cheaply, so we should raise dues or whatever it is. It is hard to prove that that is masonry or that that improves masonry or lodges. I think there's a logic to it, but I don't know. I feel like I've wandered off into the wilderness and all these guys are staring at me like I'm an idiot. So maybe I should just shut my app and let someone else talk.
Well, I think we could talk. We could certainly, not to rehash every single chapter, but we could certainly talk about a few and maybe what our favorites were and things like that. But we're getting pretty close to end of our allotment here.
All right. So it sounds like we've just wrapped up our our first episode wrapping up the Whither Are We Traveling series of papers. And we thank you all for listening. And we're curious as to what your thoughts were on the papers and on the our discussion of them. So please feel free to comment and such. We're always interested in hearing more about it. And next episode will be more talk about this topic. So we will maybe we'll look at, like David said, we'll look at some specific chapters or try and pick out some specific instances from the article. So thank you very much for listening to the Working Tools Podcast. On behalf of Stephen and Jared and David and myself, we look forward to talking to you again soon on the Working Tools Podcast. Goodbye.